Often described as the Forgotten War, the Korean War was a brutal engagement that lasted between 1950 and 1953. Ireland was not directly involved, but many Irish men fought in British and American units. 159 Irishmen died during the war. The 60th anniversary of the end of the war recently passed, and Brian O'Connell has been meeting some Irish-Korean War veterans and hearing their stories. Remind us briefly, first of all, what the war was about, Brian.
Hi, Miles. It was between South Korea, supported by the UN and made up mainly of US troops, and North Korea, supported by China and previously Russia. So it came about partly as a result of the breakup after World War II of Korea. And the full death toll, the estimate was over 1 million, but it may have been close to about 2 million, Miles. I saw a number of conflicting reports. It ended in 53 with an armistice, pretty much drawing up North and South Korea the way it had been before the war. And it's often described as the Forgotten War. And recently, some of the Irish who took part, they returned to South Korea to see what the country was like. Now, the first veteran I met was 85-year-old Michael Kelly. And Michael grew up on the farm in the West. And in 1949, he immigrated to the US. And pretty soon afterwards, he was called up for military service. He enlisted and he received training. And he ended up, Miles, as a medic in the as a US sergeant in the medical corps. He was sent to Korea. Later won a bronze medal for bravery, and we'll get to that in a minute. But here is Michael, and he's describing what Korea was like when he first arrived.
We loaded on the ship at Pier 8, San Francisco, and 17 days later we were in Yokohama, Japan. I had to look on the map to where it was. So then in Japan, we had to turn in our gear, and they were issued new stuff, and we had to go to the firing range and zero in our weapons. They told us that was our friend from now on. When I got finished the training there up on the front line, the first night was a baptism of fire. They really, they tried to break through that night and do a lot of casualties. And eventually went to Seoul and a place called Wijanbu, and then the Imjin River. And then they blew the bridges because the enemy were coming over the bridges at night. And so the next move was to go across on pontoons. And from there until the day I left, this was the same thing. And we had, of course, no beds, only trenches and foxholes. And I will say, I didn't get a lot of sleep because I was they called me the doctor on the line. It was that, of course, I had experiences on the front lines of getting hit on the knees. And I had the shrapnel, but it breaks out every once in a while. The thing is, they were a terrible enemy to fight against. And the poor women and children suffered an awful lot, you know. And they were a brutal enemy, the North Koreans and the Chinese.
And Michael won the bronze medal for bravery, Miles, and he told me about the event and how difficult it was to get the memories of the war out of his mind.
There was the ribbon I got when I saved the two fellas who were sent out to this forest to move on about 300 yards. And all of a sudden I hear all these names being called. It was my name. And these two fellas were in basic training with me. And I went back and I got the two fellas that were shot in the legs. And it brought out one in each arm. My commander said to me, we'll be going after you. You're crazy to go. And I said, I think it's my job. And I said to him, if it was me, I know they were coming to get me. And he said, I leave it to you.
Did you feel guilty at all surviving when so many of your friends probably didn't?
Well, I suppose I would say that, yes. Because I felt that it was see so many young people suffering. But when I go back and think of it, it was terrible. And sometimes I used to think that alone, if I was alone or something at the time at the house or anything, I felt compassion for those people. And I also had a certain fear. It took a long time to get rid of that. And it was very stressful. And even for my wife, I used to, when we got married afterwards, of course, I went to Ireland for 3 months to recuperate, try to get back to base. for that. It took me a long time to get over it. But my wife was always worried I'd fall down the stairs because I used to get up at night and I didn't know what I was doing, do you know, or where I was. I think it would stay with you all your life because I still think about this thing. It was a very hard war. It was especially after so close after World War II that it became such a ruthless war.
And that was Michael Kelly showing all the classic signs of post-traumatic stress disorder there, Brian, I would have thought.
Before the term was invented. Yeah.
Precisely. Battle fatigue.
Yeah.
The next veteran you met was in Inchicore.
Yeah, Aubrey Bunyan. He served with the Royal Ulster Rifles. And he began by telling me, Miles, how money led to his involvement with the British Army.
Well, I got involved because there's no work in this country, very little. So I joined the British Army and I got 49 shillings a week. I never had any animosity or anything like that. I just wanted money. Simple as that.
So tell me what career was like. I can't imagine anything would have prepared you for it.
No, nothing like it. Well, it was early then in April, the weather was extremely hot. Our job mostly was advancing to engage the enemy. They were very good with the mortar bombs, the Chinese. They didn't put it in your ear.
And did you have any reservations about shooting people, about killing?
No, not at all. Just kill or be killed.
It was kind of a forgotten war, wasn't it? Yeah. Like the rest of the people at home in Ireland or England had enough of war at that stage.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, it wasn't forgotten for the people who were there. I don't know what you called it, the forgotten war. I have no clue. But if you were there, you wouldn't forget about it.
And I know recently you all went to South Korea, did you?
That's right, yeah, in April. I got a pleasant surprise. When I was there, I saw nothing but poverty and terrified people. And now it's the 13th richest economy in the world. And to see the lovely, pleasant faces and the buildings, the roads. So we're 1,000 years behind them now.
Yeah, much changed country, mm-hmm. South Korea. And Brian, the last man you met mm-hmm. didn't actually fire a single shot in the war, but he was definitely there.
Yeah, Canon Robert Jennings, he was chaplain to the Welsh Regiment and also was with the US Marines. And he was telling me that he made a cross out of shell casings, which is actually in a church in Newcastle in County Wicklow. Now, he served with the men for a lot of the war. It was his first experience. And I started by asking him what his duties were in the war.
A chaplain's duties are probably a little bit difficult to define in a way, because if you're a signals officer or the medical officer, you know exactly what to do, bind up wounds and send messages and on it like that. I always took services every Sunday for the troop. We weren't allowed to gather too many soldiers together in one place in case they were bombed or mortared. Actually, on Christmas Day in 1952, I took 13 services altogether.
How did you, as a religious man, make sense of it on that level?
Well, I mean, that's what I was there for, you know. War is a terrible thing. It should never ever happen. Earlier on in the war, I mean, some of the, like the Imjin battle and various other ones, there was, very close hand-to-hand fighting, or equal to what happened in the First World War, it said. Literally hand-to-hand with bayonets, you know.
You know, you would have been holding a service on a Sunday and talking to people, the soldiers, about Christian principles, and the next day they were shooting the enemy.
That's right.
Which seems totally contrary to any sorts of Christian values.
Well, it does. But then that's what they were trained to do from the very beginning once they joined up, you know, because actually all war is actually terrible. But the soldiers are trained to do this, and often it's a case of either you or me, you know, at the end.
And Canon Jennings, Brian, showed you some propaganda leaflets.
That's right. There were leaflets dropped on Christmas Day and Thanksgiving Day behind enemy lines. I've tweeted some of them this morning and we'll put some on the website. And it just basically showed happy families in Florida all smiling. And on the reverse was dark, grimy pictures of soldiers in battle in Korea with the words, "You risk your life, big business takes in the dough."
Brian, thank you very much indeed. A quick footnote on a series called Distant Drums that I did about 20 or so years ago. I interviewed a man called Martin McDonagh in the Rathcarn Gaeltacht in County Meath. He was known locally as Martin Correa because there were so many Martin McDonaghs in the area. He was in the US Army. He was a prisoner of war in China. And at some point, there was an influx of prisoners from the Royal Ulster Rifles, one of whom was from somewhere in the Midlands, who spoke Irish. So they spoke Irish to each other in this Chinese prisoner of war camp. And the Chinese banned them from speaking Irish because they couldn't understand what they were saying. So hopefully that was the last time that Irish has ever been banned anywhere. Brian, once again, thank you. Thanks very much indeed for that.